Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 314 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'll send you over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
All right, tonight we're going to be talking about the Oscar nominations that were announced this week. We'll be doing This or That, the continuing game where I throw movie titles at Trevor and have him
throw me under the bus.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll drag you right back out of it like I'm we're on speed, or in the movie speed, I should say, not on speed. That's a whole different experience. And reviews today for Silence, Split, Keeping Up with the Joneses, Jack Reacher 2, Accountant Ant Snowden, our streaming online pick, and no Trailer Attic because we got a lot to talk about with the Oscars. But let's get into it. With trivia. This is a good one today because we're both.
We haven't done trivia in a while, I feel like. So.
No, we haven't because we really did the retrospective last week. And
sure.
Okay. Huge Tony Scott fans, you and I, right? Probably amongst our favorite directors.
Yeah, definitely.
This one I found to be very interesting because I didn't know this until I read it. And this apparently was true. And Tony Scott turned down a chance to direct this film because he felt that he couldn't do justice to Scott Rosenberg's script.
Ooh, I like Scott Rosenberg.
So do I. And so this is obviously a mid-90s script, we'll say, which plays characterization and dialogue above any sort of visual or dramatic event. Can you name the movie?
Oh, that's really hard. Kangaroo Jack?
No?
I mean, the only thing...
It's a classic script.
I guess one of the only... Well, I don't know. I'll say... High Fidelity.
That's a great script too. Probably his shining.
That's the only thing I can think of because anything else he's written, I feel like Tony Scott could have
directed.
It's what is it?
Beautiful Girls.
All right.
Yeah, which is classic.
Fair enough.
I'd say that's amongst the top 10 movies in '96. If I had to go back and look at that film's that year of movies.
Yeah, Scott Rosenberg's interesting. Done some really great stuff, and then just I guess paycheck stuff, right? I mean, what the fuck.
He was amongst like the Jonathan Hensley and J.J. Abrams kind of group of the 90s of doctoring scripts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he was successful at delivering the E-ticket scripts. And then he kind of slid his more personal work in there. But he always was their go-to guy to fix things. And but Con Air, I mean, that's
right.
The big paycheck, right? You know, Kangaroo Jack, like you said. He was in that Bruckheimer machine for a long time.
And something else. Oh, he's writing the new Jumanji. He's writing the new Jumanji.
Yeah, you're right.
Now,
yeah, he's back in the limelight there. So he is still working on blockbuster scripts. I mean, so he has the formula down. And he's not but the Beautiful Girls script is a great. And first of all, that movie is a very delicate movie. And I think Jonathan Demme does a great job with that movie. I love that film.
I agree. Yes.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Warner Brothers losing $75 million on
Live
by Night.
That's the number. I mean, you had asked, is Ben Affleck the new Clint Eastwood? And I think that he's slowly becoming not the new Clint Eastwood if he ain't careful.
I have to counter that, and we'll point to The Accountant, which was a surprise hit, outgrossing even Jack Reacher, with $80 million at the box office. So that has offset some costs for Warner Brothers there.
I don't know, because I think the danger here is Warner Brothers being one of the few last holdouts of the auteur, you know, style of letting a guy come in and run the whole thing like this.
I respect that.
Haven't been doing that. They've been deviating from that lately, right? And being a real pain in the ass studio. And if Ben Affleck continues to do shit like this, and really Clint Eastwood, you know, isn't going to be around forever, obviously.
We don't know that, though.
I know, really, at this point, I know we don't. But I just have to say, you know, that he's not. So we're going to lose him at some point and lose those movies and things. So it's going to be left up to Ben Affleck, or I don't know. I mean, Legendary has left, right?
At this point, they're at the building.
So they're at Universal now, as I remember. So really, Warner Brothers doesn't have much to fall back to, and my fear is that they're going to try to fall back to, they already are superhero movies, right?
Well, I think the world is falling back to superhero movies for whatever reason. And maybe we were living in a very dark real world and everyone wants to see superhuman people do, you know, that are very good or very bad. And there's no gray area like in real life. But I do want to point out that Warner Brothers also maybe got caught with this movie in the same situation that Lionsgate faced with Patriots Day, in that it was an Oscar hopeful. It fell very short of that. Even Silence fell into this trap and is losing money for all parties.
And they got, they got a lot of bad reviews, really, these movies did. I know that you've heard good word of mouth, but the reality is that there hasn't really been much interest in them.
I just think they got – there was maybe too much emphasis on the Oscar campaigns and not release strategies. Just dumping them and then expecting people – there's too much – there is too many good films or too many good word-of-mouth films in the marketplace right now. The theaters are hopping. I've been there this weekend. And it's amazing how many people still show up for movies.
There are plenty of screens that are empty at this point. I mean, look at these past few weekends. There have been clear winners and there have been clear losers. Mm-hmm. So I would say, I mean, coming into 2017, it's interesting, but we're still kind of talking about movies that feel like 2016 movies, you know, just things that didn't really catch fire or catch on.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, I want to also point out with Warner Brothers that possibly they didn't market this the same way that Eastwood felt that they betrayed him on Blood Work, which I think was a really good
movie. I have to agree.
Movie.
I think they marketed Live by Night like shit.
Yeah, so that was
I think there was no faith in it.
Complaint on that film that he did, and that Affleck might be less vocal about it because he has the whole Batman thing and he's still under a shingle.
Yeah, true.
But so, this was a very interesting when it first came out, it looked like it might be the movie of the Oscar season and maybe a huge hit. And then quietly, they just kind of botched it and it died by night, died quietly in the night.
Yes. Yeah.
Although my old man says it's great and he doesn't give a lot of positive reviews to movies, so take it for what you want.
It looks good. I mean, the performances look good. I think it'll probably be a good movie, but I can understand maybe it's not quite the right movie to be seen in a theater. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so. Whatever. What's next? What else you got for me? What are the news?
The rumor is that, first of all, James Cameron is coming back to the Terminator franchise in some capacity with Deadpool director Tim Miller in a future follow-up sequel that could possibly dismiss everything every time you've gone to see a Terminator movie since 91.
Which they can do and they can get away with because of the time loops and things. So if they do it correctly, it could be cool, you know? I mean, it's essentially what they tried to do with the last one.
You were more generous to the last one than I was. I've since seen it again. I'm a little bit kinder to it, but you...
I like it because it has Arnold in it, you know, and it's not the greatest movie, I'll admit. And Arnold's done much better movies recently than that. So I don't know. It is what it is. At this point, most movies I see are what they are. You know, they're just there's really not a lot to get excited about with them. They play it very safe and it tends to not work out.
Yeah, that one was not my favorite at all. But with Cameron coming back to the franchise, of course, there's interest anew. He's a master storyteller. He's not going to be directing this.
But why? He's come out and said he doesn't like the Alien franchise, you know, anymore. What's come about with that? He's not happy with Terminator and stuff. But really, I mean, it's not fair because no one can say that they're not happy with the Avatar franchise because it doesn't fucking exist right now, right? I mean, the guy hasn't been working, really. So how is it for him to come in and, you know,
at the
last minute and say, oh, you guys all suck? Say, where the fuck have you been?
I'll tell you where James Cameron's been. He's been on the bottom of the ocean in a submersible by himself doing Molly. And
well, he could have been making some
problems.
Great Terminator and Alien movies, damn it.
Well, I appreciate the emphasis on that. But I think that he's talking to the Anunnaki and he's figuring out our rest of our existence for. I mean, honestly, I think James Cameron might be the link between us and the alien world.
He's preparing us with Avatar.
He might be. He's getting us ready. He fixed the Deepwater Horizon. He might be able to do anything. They're also rumored to have a T2 anniversary. They missed the 25th anniversary last year, a re-release, but they were going to have one in Asian markets, I believe Japan specifically, this year. I hope they do it for an American audience. I would love to revisit T2 in 3D or not. Just to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, I agree. There's a couple of older movies. There's a re-release coming out that I saw, too. The trailer for Wayne's World.
When does this come out? Is February, is it 28th? It's late February?
I don't know. It's in there somewhere because this is one of those Fathom things where they roll out every week they play a new one, right? Or something like that. But I'm actually going to admit that I'm intrigued to maybe go see this on the big screen.
Did you see this in the big screen when you were a kid?
No, I didn't. I caught it on videotape, you know, and we own the videotape, and I watched it 1.5 times, and I never saw it in the theater, so I'm interested in seeing how it plays on theater. And even just watching that little preview clip of it that they played made me think, oh, wow, this actually might play on a big screen.
Yeah, I never saw this in theaters, although this was a big hit at the year it was released in 1992. This was a movie that I saw. My buddy had this VHS. We did a show a long time ago about videotapes that everybody had, when you know, store-bought videotapes when you were a kid.
Wouldn't it be weird to see this in widescreen?
Yeah, like
even though I do own it on DVD and I have seen it in widescreen, but I have memorized this movie in full screen. I mean, I swear to God.
My version of this movie, I actually revisited this maybe 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And in my revisiting of it was my HBO taped copy from like 1994.
I know. I still wish that I had the VHS copy because it was a great, it was like a white, it was one of the white boxes.
Oh, yeah.
It looked great. Oh, yeah. It was a great looking box. It made you really want to watch the movie and shit.
it had that strong Paramount logo on the side, you know, everything. And it was fun. I did see the sequel in the theater. And although the sequel never got any sort of acclaim, I always kind of thought it was goofy fun. I really did like the sequel too.
Yeah, well, that was the problem with the sequel, is that it was a sequel for a sequel's sake, you know, so it just didn't really pan out to mean anything.
Obviously, Mike Myers was saving his sequel powers for Austin Powers, this sequel.
Yeah.
So. let's talk about the Oscar nominations that were announced on January 24th.
Wow.
You got a full list rundown. We don't need to go through that because everybody has information and all the headlines that go with that. But anything that particularly stands out to you being present or absent?
Oh, there's so much of absolutely nothing that is exciting about this lineup to me. This is pretty much what I expected because these are like the only choices that you could have made. What could you have done differently than this?
Well,
with the movies available, I'd like to know.
Amongst my top 10 of the year, I don't see anything for 10 Cloverfield Lane in here, which was written by Damien Chavezia. I can't see this kid's name, but the 31-year-old who's up for La La Land, was a scriptwriter on that. So I would have liked to see that or even Deadpool, you know, have some fun with what it was. But, you know, the idea
they snuck a rival in their foyer, right? That's what they were willing to give you. That's what they came to the table with. That was it.
That was the bargaining chip.
That was the one. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, especially considering La La Land is about to just sweep the whole damn thing. It really just doesn't seem very exciting. Although, I am excited to watch the Oscars. Because you know they're going to be super political. And I'm interested in seeing that, like, what happens there. But also, for the whole Carrie Fisher in memoriam thing, where apparently she's asked Harrison Ford to sing us a little song.
I'm dying to see
that. So I want to see what happens with that. You know, I'm interested in that.
With all the in-ram, I mean, this was a major year of loss for everybody in the entertainment industry, let alone probably in their personal lives with the people passing. But on a public stage, a lot of people went this year. And obviously, Carrie Fisher was one of the more recent ones. Just John Hurt the other day just passed away, which is, you know.
Mary Tyler Moore.
So, yeah, I mean, almost every day you start reading about people that are going that are kind of luminary figures in the industry. And the Oscars are going to be obviously super political because that's every award show nowadays.
Political this time, you have to admit as well, especially with the Muslim ban going on and the Iranian director guy not being able to attend now. You know, it's like there's just so much fuel. There's so much gasoline on these Oscars right now, political wise, for I don't know what would happen, but I'm just kind of interested in the speeches. You know, after Meryl Streep's big thing, like who's going to give the big political thing, you know, or is everybody?
I think probably everybody was. What happened tonight on the SAG Awards, it looked like.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about Mel Gibson's reemergence as, you know, is he back in the good graces? He's nominated here for Best Picture. Best actor for Andrew Garfield and best director for himself. First time he has been up since, I believe, since Braveheart. I don't think he was nominated for Passion of the Christ. Don't get me, I have to check on that.
I don't remember, but yeah, it's clearly been a while for him. And yeah, I mean, I think as far as the trades are concerned.
I think I said Heartbreak Ridge, which is a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah, Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah.
Thank you.
I didn't even catch that, but I think you did say that. Which is another great movie, but.
It is. Go see that too.
But yeah, the trades, as far as they're concerned, they're saying he's back in, and I would have to probably agree because it seems like it's harder and harder to, as we've discussed with, you know, Live by Night and all these, and 10 Cloverfield Lane thing, it's getting kind of tough to get movies into the Oscars again, you know, and we'll just look at the Weinstein Company, right?
That used to be a sure bet if you did a movie.
That's what I mean. And it's been, they've been real iffy on it. So it's been kind of tough, I'd say, to get stuff through that awards corridor and out the other end.
Yeah, I mean, Patriots Day not garnering any nominations, Live by Night, The Founder, a lot of things that I thought possibly might be up. Jackie, I thought might be up for more things than it eventually was nominated for. Denis Villeneuve, you know, the director of The Arrival, which is nominated for, I think, 10 awards, it's tied for second with Manchester. It's up for a staggering amount of awards for a movie that I thought was a good solid movie, but nothing necessarily spectacular or game changing. I do think he's a very talented person, and I almost feel like this is a chance to jump on the bandwagon a little early to, you know, to recognize his brilliance.
Sci-fi movie though, and being a philosophical sci-fi movie, it picked up a lot of extra awards as well, I would say.
But in that same vein, I think Children of Men is a stronger film and better directed and things like that too. So
I haven't seen Arrival, but
I recommend it. See it.
I will.
Yeah,
it's out. I'll be getting it at some point, but I would bet that I agree with you on Children of Men, which is just an absolute stunning movie.
A lot of people said Martin Scorsese was snubbed here. I'll give you my review of Silence in the next bit. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I do believe that it was nominated for the right reasons, and that's in cinematography. I do want to touch on Hell or High Water, which got nominated for Best Picture, which is, you know, one of the lower grossing Best Picture nominees of the year, and a movie that you really liked. Do you think it deserved that, or is that kind of a reach out to the independent world?
Well, no more than Fences or Lion, I mean, or Manchester by the Sea or Moonlight. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It's really hard to get movies in there right now. Hell or High Water, I think, definitely deserves it. It was a really good movie. And when you look at the lineup here, it fits well into it. So I actually can't say any one of these movies shouldn't be up here.
It's strange with this Best Picture lineup, because individually I've talked about these movies with people throughout the year, and especially lately, because a lot of these just came out recently, but Arrival was out for a while, and Hell or High Water came out in the summer. And various people I've talked to have individually told me that each one of these movies is the best movie they've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like different people, you know, like Lion, I was just told this is the best movie of the year. Fences, oh my God, it was brilliant. You've got to see, it's the best movie I've seen this year. So there is a lot of people that are they're championing their movie this year. So maybe that's going to increase viewership at the Oscars, which is always a good thing. And I'm curious to see what their opening bit's going to be, what movies are going to riff on. I bet you there'll be a split kind of takeoff at some point with the multiple personalities. And, you know, I could see them doing that and making fun of things. And I think the Golden Globes did a good job of knocking that part of the show out.
I think we're going to be more political than we are movies at this Oscars.
Oh, at this Oscar? It wasn't like that last Oscar, too? The year before that?
Yeah, I know. But especially this time. It's very different than it was before.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with a new segment called This or That.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right.
We're back. That was a hell of a break.
Give me tit for tat.
I'm going to give you a titty titty.
Tit for tat.
Listen here, cat daddy.
Okay. All right. I got to remember. Know the name. It's lightning round, right?
It is lightning round. This is the new segment.
Gotta do it quick. Gotta answer quick. All right, no thinking.
I give Trevor 10. Actually, I give you 20 movies, but 10 movies that are pairing up, two pairs in a lightning round. You give me your split impulse decision on the better of the two for whatever reason you have. It doesn't necessarily have to be the better of the movies, just the one you find more sentimental towards.
Just pick one.
Right. So, are you ready?
All right.
All right, here we go. EdTV or The Truman Show?
Truman Show.
Attaboy. Deep Impact or Armageddon?
Armageddon.
Big Trouble in Little China or They Live?
Oof. Big Trouble in Little China.
Hercules with The Rock or Hercules with, what's his name? Lutz.
Hercules Lutz. With The Rock. I never saw the other one, but I'm sure that my answer would be the same.
Long Kiss Goodnight or Cutthroat Island?
Cutthroat Island.
Johnny Mnemonic or Tank Girl?
Ooh. Johnny Mnemonic.
Nutty Professor or Big Mama's House?
Big Mama's House.
Cellular or Phone Booth?
Cellular.
Lethal Weapon 3 or Alien 3?
Alien 3.
Delta Force or Executive Decision?
Delta Force.
And last, Jaws or Jurassic Park?
Well, Jurassic Park. God, that is actually... these are really tough. This is a tough lineup. Because we're splitting hairs, man.
Yeah, this is the whole point of this game. All right, let's go through this slowly, and I will give you my picks as well. You did well that round, though. I feel like if we got on a game show, you'd be my man. We could do this together very quickly.
I try to just answer quickly, but a couple of them tied me up because I thought, well, no, I do like that movie, though.
I know. I could see you start rationalizing it. Like, no, just give me your impulse decision. We'll go through it. So I said Ed TV or The Truman Show. You said?
I said Truman Show.
I would agree with you on that. And why do you pick that one over the other? Your reason?
It's a more professional movie. It's better, I think, written and emotionally impactful. But I still really do like Ed TV for all of its faults and just stupidity and just being a trashy, stupid movie.
Yeah.
I still like it. So.
Yeah, I think you nailed that one. Nothing to say there. All right, Deep Impact or Armageddon?
Armageddon, I think easily. I'm not a fan of Deep Impact at all. So
it's too slow.
That was
right?
Easy for me. It's too slow. It tries to be. It tries to do the same thing that Armageddon does, but I think emotionally, the Michael Bay direction stuff works so well with Armageddon, and the quick cutting and telling such a big story so quickly, and yet it's still a lengthy movie, and to still have the, for me anyways, the emotion come through. I just like it, and the fun, so much fun.
Yeah, I always felt that Deep Impact was basically like one of those four-night miniseries that they condensed into like a 2.5-hour movie. Mm-hmm. It would work better on television, and Armageddon was a real movie. It was a feature-length film that looked good and was meatier. All right, Big Trouble in Little China or They Live, two Carpenter classics.
And that's a tough one. I did say Big Trouble.
Right?
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. It's the toughest one. It's on par with some of the other ones.
All right, well, but I think it's the toughest one.
What do you say?
I really do love both of them. They both got classic lines in them and everything, but I have to agree with you. Big Trouble is a little bit more iconic, although They Live
I think it's easier to watch than They Live, to be honest with you. Even though there's a lot of stuff in They Live that I really like, I think They Live is a little bit slower paced and lower budget, you know, obviously. And I think Big Trouble just wins out easily for those reasons.
I think Big Trouble is easier to watch too because it's a bit of a comedy, and They Live is more, it's a little bit more clumsy in what it's trying to do, which is a little, you know, more deep. All right, next we have Hercules with The Rock or Hercules with Kellan Lutz. You didn't even see the second one.
No.
But they're both equally kind of shit. So this one, but I would agree that Hercules with The Rock.
I don't know if they would equally be shit. I like the Hercules with The Rock, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was guilty pleasure.
I liked it.
It was one of the better ones of that summer, but that just goes to show you how bad that summer was.
Yeah.
Next, we have Long Kiss Goodnight or Cutthroat Island, both Gina Davis, Rennie Harlan matchups.
I really wanted to say Long Kiss Goodnight, but I did go with Cutthroat Island. And I don't know. Those are actually two very different movies. So that's what makes that really hard.
So far, we've been in agreement on both these, and we're going to continue to do so. Mm-hmm. Cutthroat Island is the one I've revisited more times throughout, and I still think that it is a way underrated movie, and if it had come out post Pirates of the Caribbean, it maybe had been very successful. I really do.
I don't know, possibly.
Long Kiss Goodnight is clunky, man. I just watched it recently. It's not as smooth as you think it remembered to be. I'm telling you, it's clunky. All right, next we have Johnny Mnemonic or Tank Girl.
I said Johnny.
So do I, but they're both shit.
Oh, they're both absolutely terrible. I mean, they both have their, I don't really want to call it cuteness. What would you call it? Charisma? I don't know. What are they?
They're like quirkiness.
Yeah, quirkiness, I guess. I don't know. I mean, Giant Mnemonic is like the, you know, the Matrix on acid. So it's kind of fun for those reasons. And Tank Girl is just weird too. I don't know.
Tank Girl is. They're both. Tank Girl is like an early comic book adaption that didn't, you know, it was way too many hands in the pot there. You could see there was a lot of tinkering going on, and it is very confused, but it's so bizarre that it's almost worth a watch, and it has a weird cult following. And Mnemonic is just, I mean, for the Matrix to come after you, you almost go, oh, that's what they were trying to get at. They accomplished just like they just couldn't get there yet.
It's just so weird. I mean, the dolphins and stuff. It's just, it's weird. But it's good weird. I don't know.
It's watchable weird. I watch it when it's on.
Yeah, I would say it's like on the way. It's like going from Total Recall to The Matrix. This is what would be in the middle, right? Like in that timeline.
And it was.
Yes.
Nutty Professor or Big Mama's House?
And I said Big Mama's House. Even though I think Nutty Professor is funny as well.
Yeah, I go Nutty Professor actually on this one. I think that one's a classic and maybe Eddie Murphy's best post 80s movie ever. Yeah, and the whole thing in the 90s. I can't think of a better one. Although I like Nutty Professor 2 quite a bit too, but that was Martin Lawrence's big moment, right? Big Mama's House, like high watermark for him in his career outside of the Bad Boys movies.
I would say, yeah.
His comedic career. All right, next we have Cellular or Phone Booth?
And I think Cellular all the way. I don't like Phone Booth at all.
I 100% agree with you. I fucking love Cellular. I think it is such an effective little B movie. I think they should show that in film school how to write scripts.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those gems that you don't expect it to be good, and then it really is.
Yeah, especially for fans of Chris Evans, Captain America fans out there. If you've never seen it, check out Cellular. It might be rated R, but it's a really light R, and it's fun. Next, Lethal Weapon 3 or Alien 3?
I said Alien 3. I mean, Lethal Weapon 3. You do? I like Alien 3 better. It's a heavier film. And I can sink into that world a little bit better than Lethal Weapon 3, even though Lethal Weapon 3 is great too.
To me, Lethal Weapon 3 is a smoother viewing experience. They had the formula down so pat at that point that they were clearly running out of ideas, but the machine was very well greased and running at a high capacity, and Alien 3 is an interesting failure, but it always will be. In a beautiful film, and
well, director's cut fixes a lot of the problems,
but still, to me, is a failure. It just does not work as a movie, but it's so interesting because there's so many weird things going on in it. You know,
it works for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a good enough experience. I just don't recommend.
I like the characters. I like the setting. I like the idea of it, and it is kind of a one off. It's a neat thing, kind of like Split or even 10 Cloverfield Lane. You know, it's kind of. Like, even though it does have the main character in it, it's kind of a secondary story, really. Like, just this other thing that happened. It's very episodic in a way.
It is the last good Alien movie that they've ever made.
I like Prometheus, but yeah.
Oh, that's right. I always forget that Prometheus is even part of the canon because it's so far in front. Yeah. We'll see how this next one ties it up. All right, we got Delta Force or Executive Decision.
For me, Delta Force, I don't know. It's silly fun.
Delta Force is such it moves in such strange movements that you think when they get off the plane, you think the movie's over and it's got about 45 minutes left. So every time it gets me, I'm like, man, this is a long movie. But Executive Decision does almost the exact same thing by killing off Steven Seagal and it goes on for like another 90 minutes. You go, damn, this is a long movie.
Yeah.
But I'll take Delta Force just because of that kick-ass score by Alan Silvestri that had me humming that thing all day.
It's not a bad reason.
Last but not least, Jaws or Jurassic Park?
Yeah, this one's rough, but I did pick Jurassic Park.
I mean, this is the hardest one right here. Jaws is such a personal favorite, but I have to go Jurassic Park because I had the virgin experience of seeing that on a big screen that scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. You know, that was a great, great movie-going experience.
It really is a better movie, just in general. I mean, it's better written, it's better directed, and I think it's just a matter of having come later on in his career, you know, really, and also having a big budget and the studio behind him, everything was behind him at that point to make that. And Jaws is great, but it's very limited, right? I mean, and that's almost what makes it great. But regardless of that, there's a lot of limitations set on what Jaws could ever actually wind up being, you know?
Agreed.
And that shit was lifted for Jurassic Park.
To me, Jaws is somewhat hard to sit through until they get on the boat there. It's the three of them on the sea. And then I think the movie really picks up momentum and turns into something kind of special. Until then, it's somewhat routine. You know, it's hard to say routine because it was so benchmark for what at the time. But, you know, having grown up, seeing 2, 3, and 4, it became very routine. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right,
when I was a kid, Jaws 4 was on HBO every day. So, in fact, there was a line on the Goldbergs recently where they referenced that as well. All right, well, you did well today for This or That. I think you did pretty good.
Great. I got the thumbs up.
Yeah, well, I think we agree on something.
I can continue being on the podcast. You know, I'm saying.
Let's do this again. You know, next week, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk reviews. So I saw Split, the number one movie in America, along with, 14 other million people in this country. And now you've seen it as well. You're pretty keen on it, correct?
Hey, I saw it before you.
Yeah. You did.
Yeah, I really liked it. I don't know. I'm getting a vibe that maybe you didn't.
I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest with you. It's it had a lot heavier of an emotional core than I thought it was going to. I really thought this was going to be a little bit of a genre film, and this is a horror movie. You know, this is a lot of about people in horrific, horrible situations. I mean, I didn't, you know there was going to be the molestation aspect, and I just found it to be kind of nihilistic in a lot of, you know, really like a horror. I just didn't expect it to be as much of a horror film as it was. I thought it was going to be more of a thriller in the sense of Don't Breathe was, and
well, it was very thrilling. I mean, I would say as well, but I get what you're saying, but I think it was.
I was
both.
A little taken aback by it, to be honest with you, for how how what they were doing and how taboo things were.
I will say this about it. I do, and I told you, I do think 10 Cloverfield Lane is a better movie because I think that world is better and easier to live in, because when you have the moments of levity and really the you can stop the movie at some point and kind of let things settle down. Well, 10 Cloverfield Lane was better set up for that, you know, and you weren't sure if John Goodman was a bad guy or a good guy, and he could be a good guy, you know, throughout these times. And there were moments where the whole group was getting along and they were living under there doing it great. But in Split, whenever there's a moment of laughter or funniness, it always takes place right smack dab in the middle of tension. And the main character, this poor girl, does not find this funny, right? And is trapped in this tension-filled moment. And it just never releases from that ever. You know, even though you might laugh at it, you're never fully ever able to, you know, relax.
Yeah, you're never disengaged from the tension of what's happening in that world. And it's a very dark, I mean, that movie begins on a extremely, the opening to that, the prologue there is very effective. I liked the title sequence and everything. I thought this is going to be, First of all, James McAvoy deserves Oscar consideration for what he's pulling off here. This isn't just
It's really good.
He is excellent in this movie. You are reading things on his face. A lesser person may have hammed it up a little bit too much or not been able to hit these notes, but he is spot on. And props to M. Night for catching these moments, you know, and picking the right takes and understanding what they're doing together.
That's what I would say about this movie. This was a real movie. This thing cost, a reported $9 million or something like that. Something
this is,
ridiculous.
This is
a single digit.
Two-hour movie. This is a real film.
It's a film, you know? Yeah, exactly. So you look at the framing of this movie. You look at how scenes play out and how things are done. You think, holy shit, this is a real... This is the first time in a long time that I really sat down and just watched a real movie. And I watched a guy... do something. Speaking about Shyamalan here, you know, the auteur theory, which I want back so badly, because when someone has full control over everything, this is what comes out of it a lot of times.
Well, he's doing what Rodriguez is doing in Texas, and the fact that he's living over there in Pennsylvania, he has his own studio system type thing set up around his acreage. He has editing bays, sound stages, everything shot in house, done. You know, on his total creative control, and Blumhouse Productions, credit to them, have let him run loose, and they've kept everything on budget, and they've done these stories that he is really good at telling, these smaller stories. My problem with this movie is the length. For such a dark movie, it is a long time to be trapped in this kind of world. I didn't, but then again, it could have been that the film was just working on me. It's almost too soon for me to give this kind of review on it. I just know that impulse reaction was some of the molestation stuff was way darker than I anticipated in a movie that I thought was just going to be kind of a genre film. But it gave it a weight that I don't think would have been there otherwise. So I understand its importance. As for the big twist, it was kind of Much Ado About Nothing, was it not? I mean, that felt almost like a placed in such like that.
I loved it. I thought it was, first of all, I thought it was a great reveal. And it worked for me. I love the idea of this being, and yeah, it's tacked on. I don't know. We're not really talking about the end of the movie twist, no, which is pretty bland, you know, really when it comes down to it.
Right.
But we're talking about there's a scene at the end of this that ties it into another universe and another film that he's done.
Right.
And for me, that's, you know, a cool idea. I like that idea of this, taking place in that same universe. I don't know why. It really has no value. I just like it.
Well, it makes sense because that particular film that it references has been reported to be the personal favorite of M. Night. And it makes sense also with all the other you know, implications of the superior beings and all that kind of stuff that's going on in the movie. It's set up a certain way that you could understand it. However, I think that other film that he's mentioning is a better movie in this sense. But
that's true.
Yeah. I do think that this is a strong, like you said, strong way to start off the year, though, for a genre film.
I thought this was really good, yeah.
Yeah, this is
just well-written, dialogue, well-directed, well-shot, you know, everything. And tell me, I mean, there's so much misdirection in this. The movie's called Split. Tell me there's not a moment in this movie where every single character, you can't think in some way that they are a split personality of someone else.
Right, I really thought
it's crazy.
The reveal was going to be that the girl was the 24th.
Right?
Yeah,
but they blatantly like give things away that people don't have split personalities. Some people don't. You know, I'm pretty sure there's another person in here that does. The doctor, right? She clearly has to. She has to be one. She has to be. Who is that other old lady?
What?
The other old lady, the doctor,
yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. right? Who, there ain't.
Yeah.
I bet you that's a split personality right there. But the three girls, I just felt like at some point, like that was going to come back and slap me in the face, and they were going to be a split personality or something.
Well, I also thought, you know, right? they were setting something up when the doctor said about, you know, the molestation. They set off these split personalities
exactly.
because the young girl and the whole. So there is misdirection. And was the uncle played by the dude who is the ogre in Parker Lewis Can't Lose? Or just
yes.
me? I thought so. Where's he been? Just waiting for this role?
Yeah, he doesn't, I guess, get around very much. But yeah, I know. He just, I don't know. He has that certain look.
But
he's scary. But it was right from the beginning, right? In the beginning, when he abducts the girls, they give you that idea that maybe she is, I don't know, like not even there.
Right, because her reactions to things
and his reaction to her, and like it's just weird. Yeah, like you don't like the misdirection was really good and keeping me guessing and expecting that Shyamalan twist ending, which never happened, and I really didn't mind that it didn't happen. But I don't know, playing on that worked.
I think the guy is working in his wheelhouse, whatever he's doing right now, and he should stay there because working in the studio system was not conducive to. The kind of films he does well, and this is a strong candidate for probably going to be the best horror movie of the year. Last year was a horrendous year for horror, and this year starting strong already. Although I thought 10 Cloverfield Lane is the better of if you're comparing the two.
Yeah, it's an easier movie to watch, funner to watch, really.
I just like the world a little bit better that they're the outside world of the story. Let me tell you real quick about Silence. I caught this Martin Scorsese film the other night, a 2-hour and 40-minute movie. That feels like about 5 hours and 20 minutes. This is an extremely dull, slow-going, interesting story, I guess, in the sense of I didn't really know these events were going on. The Jesuit priests being persecuted, and over in you know samurai Japan.
This is a true story.
It is a true story about you know Liam Neeson's Father Ferreira. He goes missing in 1633 when these Jesuit priests were taken to a volcanic site, crucified and had like volcanic water, lava water poured on their bodies, hot spring water. So he's gone missing and Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver are dispersed or begged to go find the priest 7 years later after no contact. They show up, have to hide from the Inquisitor who's going around looking to kill Christians or have them convert back to Buddhism. And the movie is beautiful to look at in the sense of these kind of movies look, you know, it doesn't do anything new, I'll say that, but it looks, you know, the foggy shadows and people coming out of thick of things and the beautiful hillside scenery. And, it you know, Andrew Garfield, his character goes through and apostatizing himself and all this really dramatic kind of stuff. But it, just like The Mission years ago with Robert De Niro, this movie doesn't move you. It just kind of goes through its paces rather slowly and dully. And it's dutifully performed and it's professional and everything about it, but it's just not emotionally engaging. It's not really visually engaging. And it's just, it feels like a long history lesson. It doesn't do anything for you. And I can see, this movie has no commercial aspirations. So I can't believe they even thought to release this like nationwide. I'm surprised because they spent money on it and there's people in it, but it's ponderous, to say the least. I mean, I just watched Amadeus recently. We were talking about off-air.
Oh, so good.
And for a three-hour movie, that thing fucking moves.
So good.
It's the opposite of this. You know what I mean? It's a period. This is another period movie that is extremely self-important. And you can almost feel them thinking, oh, we're getting the Oscar here. We're, you know what I mean? This is, this is, like, when they see this, this is going to, you know, this is going to blow audiences away. Not so, Marty.
Well, I felt that Scorsese has failed me a couple times in the past for much the same reason you're saying here. I think Shutter Island and Hugo are both movies that failed to move me, period.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And so if it's anything like that, and those are both movies that went through their paces, meticulous paces, you know, nonetheless, and very plotted out and everything's here and there, you know, it is Scorsese, I'm sure, in the end. But if it just winds up being silence, you know, rather than making you feel anything or noise, what's the point, right?
I would actually recommend Kundun over this one.
Right.
The other one, which wasn't great, but at least it was the best of these religious themed ones he's ever done is, I can't think of the name of it right now, but the one with William Dafoe playing Jesus Christ in the 80s. The Last Temptation of Christ.
Right, The Last Temptation of Christ, yeah.
Which is, you know, a precursor to The Passion of the Christ with the talking to the devil serpent type person and all that kind of stuff. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk commercial movies here. Jack Reacher 2.
Movies, you mean straight to DVD movies?
I said that this was the closest Tom Cruise has ever appeared in a straight to DVD type movie. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you. I still like the movie. I like the character. But this is just, this feels like, you know, something that should be on Netflix. Or,
I said this was like an expanded NCIS type fucking episode.
Sure, something like that. I mean, I was thinking something along the lines of, God, what's the Netflix Western thing now? I can't remember now.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
They got a Western?
Yeah, it's really good. I can't remember. Guy, Sheriff in Wyoming.
Oh, you're talking about Justified.
No, fuck no. I'm talking about a Timothy Oliphant shit. Oh God, we'll just go on. I'll never fucking remember.
But regardless, this.
But it's very good. But it's older. You know, this kind of stuff just reminds me of like you know like 50-year-old, 60-year-old men would like this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense at all.
Well, it seems cheap to me. Like everything about it, I think it's kind of clumsily directed by Edward Zwick. You wouldn't see, I don't think there's any of his.
Yeah, it's very TV-ish. That's what I'm
right.
Trying to
it's
say.
Just, it's competently staged and done. There's nothing memorable about it. The character, I don't think the love interest girl, I don't think she's anything memorable. I think the daughter storyline is, you know, as banal as possible. There's nothing interesting done there. And Cruise himself isn't used to any sort of strong suit. The beginning sequence is already given away in the trailer. It just goes on and on and on. There's no real bad guy, at least Jai Courtney, who I wasn't a huge fan of. But it had Werner Herzog with him as the bad guy in the first one. The bad guy here is some nameless dickhead who's like at every other fucking B-movie. I mean, comparatively, this is, I thought, really poor production. And just really a cash grab just to fucking throw a sequel out. Like, what were they going to lose the rights if they didn't make another one? I feel like they had to.
Well, I mean, I agree with that. He said that the whole reason they chose this storyline to tell was they just grabbed a book off the shelf. So, and it does, it feels like that. It feels like a TV episode of this. I do like this world. The one thing I will say is this does feel like maybe a number four or a number six or something in this franchise series. It shouldn't have been the second one.
Right.
I'm fine with this being in the thing though. This is a fine installment, but it is a lesser one for sure. And Longmire is the show I was thinking of.
Longmire, there you go.
But it is very similar to this, you know, detective type strong guy.
I just think that
I don't know. You don't like this world?
I like Cruise. He's one of my favorite actors. It's not that I don't like this world. I don't mind this character. I just thought that this one just was. that we've lost any sort of compelling reason to have this character come back. There's no
reason.
He's not
going. He's never going back.
There you go. Neither may I after this one.
Ah, come on, you will too. You'll just won't go to the theaters.
Ah, shit, I know, right? I'm gonna see The Mummy. What's the difference?
Yeah, me too. It's good though.
It does look good. But the Jack Reacher thing, though, I was so impressed with the first one because I thought, well, here you go with like a little side franchise. But now we've gotten even smaller. That makes the first one look like a big important movie.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. This should be more of a fourth, you know, maybe a fifth, a sixth, something in the series where it's. Just a little extra padding there. Just a little something to hold you on until you get to something else. It shouldn't have been a sequel by
any means.
You
better be careful. I mean, the next one might have been like a Netflix original.
I'd be fine with that. This was good enough to be a Netflix original. Have you seen a lot of the Netflix original stuff? This is way better than that, so I'd have been okay.
Let's move on. Tell me about Keep It Up with the Joneses. I wanted to see this one. Did not catch it. What's going on?
Love the cast on this. One of the main reasons I saw this, and they're all good. And it is, I will say, it's a cute movie, is what it is. And it does exactly what it needs to do. It makes you laugh a little bit, keeps you occupied, and then it's over. So, there you go.
Which is all things that were not possible to say about Masterminds. So I'm glad that Galifianakis at least had one, although they both bombed. This did look like the better of the two.
It shouldn't have come out in theaters. I mean, there's just no way.
This is like a 90s
I would have
concept.
Been, yeah. Well, it plays very much like that. I would have been extremely bored watching this in theaters and probably would have given a much worse review. But being at home, being able to be on my phone or doing something else while this plays, it's fine. And like I say, it's kind of it's just a cute movie really more than anything else.
So, yeah, so Trevor's going to be on the poster. It says, well, I can scratch my balls. This is a good movie.
Yeah, yeah, if I can get my finger up my ass while I watch it, I'll be happy.
You guys over here tickling his tonsils.
Although I do that in the theater, so I don't.
Now we have, let's not do that. All right, so let's just move on. Tell me about Snowden. That's another one I missed, but it's high on my list. Is Nicolas Cage in this movie?
He is.
Oh, shit. It's got to be good.
I mean, he's barely in it. But yeah, this is a surprisingly great movie. I really enjoyed this one a lot. I don't know. What can you say? I mean, it's a spy movie, really. It really is. And the way that Oliver Stone tells this, clearly blows it all up and everything, but he does it in such a way that it's so, you don't question it. You just go along with it. And it's very exciting. And I don't know why or in what world other than this one, that Oliver Stone has created, that the Snowden story would be this exciting.
And it really got nothing, no consideration.
And I feel a little let down, I guess, at that point. But, you know, I kind of understand it. I was blown away. I was a little surprised by how good it was, really.
It's
I really
just
expected
Gordon Levitt's
it to be
performance
dumb.
As obnoxious as it looked in the trailer with that voice.
It really is. There are moments when I swear to God, I hear it sounds like Ashton Kutcher is what it's really what he sounds like. And there are moments when it's like chalk on a nail board or on a God, nails on chalkboard. Excuse the stroke there. It does happen every once in a while where it just comes out and it's so Ashton Kutcher. You're just like, oh God, that voice doesn't like work for you. But I'd say throughout the majority of the course of the movie, it really does work. And he's really good in it. And so is everyone else. I mean,
so it's a better movie than The
Walk.
It was
a surprisingly good movie. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, much better movie than The Walk.
You know, I think Stone is extremely underrated. There was a time when he was heralded as like one of our greatest American filmmakers, and that long time has passed that.
I tell you, I love W, and this is a lot like taking that, you know, like taking real life stuff and making it dramatic, you know, making it worthy of the screen, very much like what they did with Social Network, you know.
Oliver Stone's such a big personality, too, that I feel like he's, you talk about an auteur, one of the last people whose personality comes out through his films, you know, M. Night. Is definitely putting his imprint on his films. Mm-hmm. This is an Oliver Stone film. Feels like an Oliver Stone. It has a certain sort of energy and vibrancy that I would expect. So and that's why I want to see Snowden.
The other side of that is that this movie is not preachy at all. It lets you come to all your conclusions are all yours. You know, it provides a helping hand, but I'm used to Stone movies kind of, or even just Stone himself being kind of a preachy guy in a way. And that's just not in here at all.
His touch has actually lightened over the years. You go back and watch something like The Doors, Any Given Sunday. I've watched both those recently. Both movies I highly recommend. Even JFK are amongst my favorite movies ever made. And then you look at something like World Trade Center, even Wall Street, the sequel that came out that we both like, are much more subdued on a filmmaking level, on kind of an aggressiveness of agenda.
I agree with you on that.
So he's mellowed in a sense, but he's still maintained a veracity as a filmmaker. And like I said, there's a vibrancy to his movies that is undeniable. I mean, I used to look forward to seeing an Oliver Stone film, and he's one of the filmmakers that are making movies, but they don't get any sort of publicity. It's almost like when Francis Ford Coppola releases another movie on Netflix, and you're like, oh, that's directed by Coppola? You're like, I didn't hear about this movie.
Yeah.
Like something called Petro. Did you ever hear about this thing? I was like, oh, shit. Exactly.
Petro.
Exactly.
Yeah, so this is a surprise movie. You might even be surprised it's directed by Oliver Stone. It's very palatable and really good. I mean, he clearly wanted to make something, want to tell a good story. I don't know. Good movie.
I hope its failure doesn't signify the end of his chances of getting to do stuff like this, because it's important.
I don't think so, because when you're Oliver Stone and you're still working, you know, he can probably, as long as he doesn't stop working, right, he'll probably be fine.
I would just imagine he can always write. You know, he came up as a screenwriter, and he could always end up writing if he had.
Well, he has such a big name. He's going to always get, when he comes to the table and says, I'm going to make a movie, he's going to be able to attract a cast, right?
Well, he did for Savages.
So he's probably going to be able to get the movies made, I would imagine.
Savages would be the only one that would punch holes in my theory about him calming down, because that was a hyper realistic film. But
yeah, but this is nothing like that. Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting director. I don't know.
Love his career. Even U-Turn was such an odd failure. It's just a peculiarity.
That's another one that actually is pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about The Accountant, which I wanted to see for a long time. Got decent reviews.
Me
and
too.
Big box office. You're sounding like you didn't like it.
I am not a fan of The Accountant.
It's strange. Everybody was telling me this is the one to see.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. I thought it was pretty boring. There's not a lot of action in it. I mean, the reality is I thought this was going to be more John Wick Batman, and it's more really The Accountant, which is unfortunate. But he really is just this... he's literally a guy that's socially retarded, right? He can't really...
make any sort of connections with people.
Yeah, do that kind of stuff. And yet... for some reason kills people and is involved in things. I don't know. The movie really makes no sense. It makes no point as to why things are the way they are. It's just that he's a cold guy. You know, he doesn't really have feelings. So he does this type of stuff. And typically that's like a hitman thing, but apparently here it's numbers, you know, it's running the books for guys, for questionable people. Right.
Hold on. So if he's socially handicapped and awkward, how can he make the connections for these mafia people to get them to trust him to do their books?
Apparently, that's a part of it. I don't know. They just say. I mean, the cops that are investigating this all wonder the same thing. You know, well, this guy must be good. You know, nobody has this many accounts like this and survives. How's he doing it? Right.
So this is an equalizer thing situation. He's like, so we got a special person instead of OCD. He's got autism.
Less than The Equalizer. I mean, The Equalizer was good. It was emotional, and it worked. And this movie, I felt, lacked that. Like, they include the girl, right, Anna Kendrick, as a way to kind of get him, to hook him in, right? Much like Jack Reacher's daughter, right? She's just there to hook him in, but not really for any other value or anything. You know, she comes and goes, and, you know, and really she doesn't show up till way into the movie, and then
it's
she just disappears.
Plot device, just like the daughter was in
Reacher. Yes, exactly. Whereas in The Equalizer... well, I feel it still is a plot device, obviously, but they have a much more emotional connection to that movie, to where you believe that, okay, that character would actually give a shit and would do something about it. Whereas in The Accountant, I never feel like he would really care necessarily, you know? And there are moments where you think, like, how, you know, how mentally challenged is this guy actually? I mean, in reality, because they kind of walk that line pretty shittily. You know, sometimes he's funny and he can, I don't know, deal with people and things, and other times he can't. It just doesn't, I don't know. No. It doesn't add up for me. I really didn't like the movie. I thought it was very boring, and I wish that I don't know, if you do something like this, they should have gone a little more superhero-ish, a little more John Wick.
So what you're saying is he listened to Robert Downey Jr. and he didn't go full retard.
I mean, if he had gone the full retard route there and you know, I can't even think of the thing. What is he supposed to have? I can only call it autism. Thank you, autism. God.
If he doesn't have Alzheimer's.
Maybe, I mean, maybe I have Alzheimer's.
Maybe he might have a stroke. But somebody down that.
But right, he's supposed to have autism in this, but it's supposed to be like a mild case of it, I guess, you know, just to kind of assure you that he can, in fact, you know, exist on his own. But I do, had it been more autistic, you know, had he been like more like, damaged in that way, it might have been a better movie, really.
It's already played. I mean, I feel like when you're talking about this, I feel like I'm watching the beginning of Daredevil and Matt Murdock's folding up fives and 20s and shit. You know what I mean? I feel like I've already kind of seen this like thing from him. So I wasn't all that jazzed about it, but people kept telling me to go see it.
Well, I mean, but the acting here is stiff-faced, stiff dialogue because he's a stiff guy. Mm-hmm. Right, so that doesn't really translate though very well for me, because what's the difference between that and bad acting?
Yeah, that's easy to do. That's walking through a role. Maybe he had to get Live by Night greenlit, but this was directed by Gavin O'Connor, who you didn't care for Warrior, and that's amongst my favorites. And so is
Prime but Warrior. Well, I didn't care for it, the movie as a whole. Warrior has moments in it that are just blindingly emotional. Mm-hmm. And this movie is lacking that entirely.
I'm still going to watch this one, but I'm actually more
I wish you will. You might like it. Yeah. I don't know.
Now, but more than The Accountant, because I really did want to see that. All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 314 on the Movie Mavericks podcast. We want to thank you guys, as always, for joining us. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe. Review the show, leave a rating, comment, anything like that on the site or on iTunes. Check out MovieMavericks.com for the latest reviews, and check back in with us next week. We'll have a new show for you next Monday. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com/warp9. Engage!